As a coach, we are not responsible for our athletes' experience, but we can influence their experience for the better by what we do. That's something that one of today's guests, Keith Mayer, shared with me on today's podcast that we spent the majority of our conversation really unpacking that. Because it begs the question, how do we get better at what we do? How do we become a more effective coach in a way that our progress is noticeable to ourselves and in the experience of our athletes? Today's guests are going to share some insights into this. Keith Mayer has been coaching football, or soccer as it is called in America, since 1981. He currently serves as the academy coach at Liverpool FC. His son David also played professional soccer, coached at Man City for a short while, and is now at the Red Wolves Club in Utah. They authored the book Goldust and started a podcast a few years ago with the same name, the Goldust Podcast. They aren't just coaches, they are mentor coaches to many other coaches in the game, and they're really invested in coach development. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm your host, JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Nate Sanderson. The mission of this podcast is to help you become a better leader and build a better culture. In addition to this podcast, I'm the founder of TOC, which provides one-on-one coaching and consulting for leaders. Learn more about us at tocculture.com. This episode is brought to you by the TOC newsletter. Every Thursday, our newsletter includes two things you don't want to miss out on. Firstly, the notes to that week's podcast episode. Whether you're listening while driving the car, out for a run, or doing the dishes, we don't want you to miss the biggest takeaways from each episode. Secondly, each newsletter is a short article from myself or Nate on leadership and culture. These articles are designed to inspire, encourage, and provide practical insights into leadership and culture building. Our content is a perfect fit for anyone who wants to stay up to date with the latest trends and insights in culture building. You can subscribe to the newsletter at tocculture.com or by clicking on the link in the details of each episode. So Keith, you and your son, you're not just into coaching, you're into coach development. You obviously have some sort of mission behind what you're doing within your writing and your podcasting. And I'm curious, what's the motivation behind that? Like, what's your focus or mission in coach development? What's driving you?
As a coach, we're not responsible for our athletes' experience. What we can do, though, is we can influence their experience through what we do and how we actually help them for the better, for the betterment for them. If we can influence someone for the betterment for them, then that is what it's about. Prior to that, my experience is what can I get from them? And if we actually change the narrative and what can I give them, actually gives it a different meaning, gives it a different purpose, gives it a little bit more laser-guided direction. So So coaching in itself, defining that, because I remember some years ago when I was over in Atlanta, I'd been offered a job out in Atlanta to become a technical director of a club. I was with the exec director of the club, and he took me around to visit Coach Steve. And Coach Steve, he's got his goggles on, he's got his glasses on, he's got coach written all over his shirt. And he's actually working with, doing one-to-ones with some young females around in between 12, 14 years of age. And all he was doing, Coach Steve, was doing some one ball between about half a dozen players, running in out cones, passing it back, and then doing some progressives, doing some running, doing some exercise. And these young girls loved it. Anyway, my flight back, I'm actually sat on the plane. I'm going, I had to try to define what the word coach means. What is it? What does it mean that? And I think any definition would be right, because as we've got three coaches on the line here and many listening, we'll all have a slightly different definition to what coach is. What is it? And I'm yet to find out one that actually would suit across the footballing world, the community. There is just a definition, and really for me it's influencing people for the better. If we can do that, that's great. Mm-hmm. Because that's what we're aiming, our intention is to actually help people to improve, to take them on their journey, not our journey, that we're part of their experience. But we're not responsible for the athlete's experience, but we can influence it.
I really like what you just shared there. And I want to unpack that some more. I think so often as coaches, we come with this mindset of what can I do to get more out of our athletes instead of just what can I give them? And I think just that shift in language also comes back to this idea of whose responsibility is it? You know, we can offer something, but it's their responsibility to take it. We can create a program that is transformational, but they have to step in and want to be a part of that at some point, you know? And obviously we're trying to do as good of a job as we can to extend that invitation to them. And that's, I guess, what I kind of dive into here with you guys is around this idea of a level of awareness. Like, and I want to kind of step back from like the coach player relationship, and I just want the coach's awareness. I think so often on the coach's journey, there becomes this point where we become aware that the relationships with our players aren't very effective. We're not very good at building relationships with players. We're not good at motivating our players, especially as this generation, this new generation, Generation Z is coming in. It's becoming harder than ever to connect and to motivate. So we have this awareness that we're not doing a great job. And then some coaches just put their hands up and say, I'm done, or I'm just going to keep doing it, and it's their fault. But I think a lot of the coaches, especially coaches that are listening to this podcast, are listening, obviously, because they're looking to take better, more responsibility for what they can do. I think the trick is this process of actually implementing. And we're going to dive into some ideas around what coaches can do to build relationships and stuff like that later on today. But just in your own learning journey as a coach, what does that look like? You know, you get new ideas, you hear about new ways of doing things. How have you guys both grown as coaches? What's your learning process looked like?
The first part of it is just being very, very solid in your values and your beliefs, and being consistent in your behaviors and consistent in what you do believe. I think that's absolutely the first thing. And from there, JP, there's a quote that I use and really do enjoy from John Dewey. It's, we do not learn from experience. We learn from reflecting on experience. And I think coaching is about a lot of time getting things wrong and being able to effectively reflect on it to then work out another way the next time. So from a reflection standpoint, it is something that I've over the last few years become better at, no question, where I'll reflect on interactions that I've had with players, or I'll reflect on, even if it's a session, if I reflect on things that have taken place in an environment from a culture standpoint. And I think the first part of it is coaches will be very quick across the board to look at the player first, or to look at the group as to why something's not working. And really, it should be you looking inwards at yourself. Is there something that I did or something that I did not do that I could have done better or could do better next time? And if so, what is that? And I think a big part of that is around ego and just letting go of your ego and opening the door to not criticism, but feedback and feedback, whether that be internal feedback or feedback from outside. So I think that's a big part for me. And then the other one would be just around processes. I think the process really should drive everything that goes on. So even at the top level where you're working, results are important, of course, but you don't get them without the process anyway. And having the right steps in place to get where you need to get to. So they're the key ones for me. And I would say the last one is, and Robin Sharma, simplicity is the trademark of genius. I think people are very quick to overcomplicate. And
I love what you've shared, and I want to dive into kind of through those three things a little bit further, because I think that this question I ask a lot of coaches is, how do you work on your coaching when you're not coaching? How do you work on your coaching when you're not coaching? And I think so often, back to your John Dewey quote, they just go out and feel like, well, I'm getting all this experience. I'm coaching and coaching and coaching, and I go from one practice and I'm coaching five teams. But to your point, there isn't a level of intentionality outside of that. And you're talking about how we have to be more intentional in a reflection and in some of our processes and in simplifying things. I think that's phenomenal. Help us understand from your perspective what your process is for reflection. What does that look like for you? And maybe in some of the work and study of other coaches, what have you seen maybe other people doing that you have been intrigued about or you found to be effective?
For me, it starts the moment I get in the car. And I know that if something hasn't gone well, it hits me straight away, because I wanna provide positive experiences for the people that I'm working with, or feel like I'm making an impact. Mm-hmm. And if I get in the car and I feel like I've not done that, it eats away at me a little bit.
And you take responsibility for that, which I think is so much the first piece. And you mentioned that, like, so often coaches are like, oh, today Johnny was a crappy effort or whatever. We couldn't, you know, but it comes, you start from a place of self-awareness and self-responsibility. I love that. Sorry, keep going.
Yeah, of course. No, and you mentioned self-awareness it's huge. I think being aware of yourself when you talk about that, I think the emotional side of it is huge. So is the way that you've acted or behaved appropriate for the session? Were you the reason why the energy was low? And we interviewed in the book around, it was a coach who at the time was the most successful coach in, from a win percentage standpoint, in the history of the Super League in England. And he talked about coaching energy, and it's stuck with me. It's something I'll never forget. Where when he walks onto the field, he has to make sure that he is bringing energy, not just for him, but for his players. And the quote that he used was, I had one set of eyes. So I have one set of eyes. I have 20 players looking back at me. And if I'm not in a place where I'm energetic, there's 20 set of eyes that see that. And it was something that after he said, I went, you know, man, am I doing what I need to do when I walk on the field to make sure that I get people in the right space? Because if, as the leader of the group, if I'm not where I need to be from that standpoint, it can impact. So that's probably the first place that I look, is if we have a game and we start flat, was it me? Was I flat when I arrived at the game today? Was I flat during the warm-up? Was the way I interacted with people not appropriate for a game? And obviously from a technical standpoint, from the session, that'd be something, I've mentioned it earlier on, I'm very fortunate. I'll speak to my dad about it regularly. We speak every single day, every day. Mm-hmm. And we probably speak more if I've had a bad session than if I've had what I believe to be a good one. And I'll just explain, look, we did this and it didn't work. Felt like it didn't work. And very, very fortunate again that the experiences that my dad has gathered over his several years puts me in a place where I can learn from him. Mm-hmm. And having access to that not many people will get makes life much easier for me. So that's one start, another part of it. And then obviously you have, like you mentioned earlier, JP, there's the amount of knowledge that you can gather now over social media, over the internet, the amount of access that you have through podcasts, where like yourself, you're doing this podcast and you're sharing information with people. And I think the big part for people is just being able to sift through and get the right amount of information and not having an information overload. And I think if you look at laptops, I think laptops are a really good example for this. You buy a new laptop and it's quick, it moves, everything happens very nicely, and you start downloading stuff onto it. And then you put a bit more, and you just bombard the laptop with information, and before you know it, it's slow because there's too much in there. So I think being able to get the right information and being able to process that side of it is important too. So yes, look, having access to information is amazing, but at the same time, I think you also have to be mindful that you can't overload at times.
What I really like is this level of self-awareness comes down to, you shared that example of that coach and yourself. It's the questions we ask of ourselves. And sometimes we might be able to find those solutions ourselves, but what I'm also hearing is you got your dad on the line as well. You got, who's your coach? He's your coach to help you on your coaching, right? So you've got your dad, you got somebody to help you sift through some of that stuff. From that, I'm assuming I have an action item for potentially next practice. I'm going to try this. As well as, like you alluded to there, there's the World Wide Web full of loads of information that we can take and we can try. My next question for you here, David, is how do you then decide and how do you take that? I think there's a reflection part where, dang it, that didn't go well today, or I'm pissed off by how that practice is, or I have these action items, or I hear this idea on this podcast, or I see this coach tweet about this. And we say we want to do that, but all of a sudden we got a list of 100 things that we want to do differently. Could you share maybe a little bit about your processes and how you simplify?
I think the first part of this is knowing what you want. So from my standpoint and from a soccer standpoint, I have a pretty clear model of how I want to play and what I want out of the players that I have. So I'm working with players that are older, they're at a level where they're right on the cusp of being pro athletes. And we've got quite a few in the group that will sign professional contracts probably over the next couple of years. And that is our mission. That's our why. And obviously from there, you work with high level athletes like that. It's how do I want them to play? What do I want it to look like? And why do I want it to look like that? And I think across every sport, there's so many different ways to play the game. So just to simplify, if you look at soccer, it's, well, you can have the ball on the ground and play this way, or you can launch it. What do I prefer? And why do I prefer that? So everything I do would go back to that. What do I want the group to look like on Saturday and the Saturday after? And the Saturday after, and the Saturday after, because that's a long-term thing. I don't think in terms of developing a way of playing or a style is something that takes a while. It is a process. And I think if we look at the Premier League, there's been a lot of discussion around this, around the amount of managers that have been sacked. And they come in, they're in a role for 3 months, and then they get fired. They've not had time to put their processes in place at that point. There's no chance. So just to go back to, I don't want to repeat myself, but having the why and how I want to do things first and foremost. And I'll see something on the internet, or I'll speak to somebody and they'll talk about a way of doing things, and it might be fantastic. And there's a lot of stuff that's out there that is fantastic, but it might not fit how I want to do things. And as long as I know why I want to do what I want to do and how I want to get to that, at that point, I think I'm in a better place to then sift through and really go, right, here are my 3 points. This is what I need to do to get a better job, or to do a better job in the next session. Obviously, with the feedback that I've received from myself, first and foremost, and then the feedback I receive from peers and mentors around me. And at that point, we roll from there. And like, if the next session is better, great. There's probably still something that needs to be worked on or improved or helped. And then the other part of it, JP, is working with the individual and the person. The person always comes before the player anyway, every time. And I actually had a conversation last week with an MLS, someone that is involved and high up in and around an MLS first team, around there's a lot of time spent around teams and not enough time spent around individuals. And I sit in a lot of presentations where people talk around organizational stuff and team stuff and how we need to do this as a collective. And the reality of it is, if you don't get the individual right, it's you're going nowhere, I don't think, at that point.
I love this, what you shared there about starting with what you want it to look like, because that's a great place, because there's so many good ideas. I remember I got an email this morning from an American football coach. He had talked about some wheel that they had for conditioning based upon some sort of consequence. And I'm very, for myself, I don't want to use physical conditioning as a consequence. That's a belief of mine. I'm not opposed to it on other teams and other coaches using it when there's sort of agreement and the players come up with it. But I was really curious in this. And the way you explained it, it actually sounded really cool. Like, it really did. And it sounded like a great idea. And for another coach, that might really be effective based upon the type of program he's trying to build, you know? But it wasn't for me, you know? And I just like, it comes back to what I'm trying to build. The same with, I help a lot of coaches plan. And I know he's not here today, but our co-host Nate, he does a lot of like team meetings every Wednesday, 30, 45 minutes. It's character, it's culture, it's mental health. I personally am more like 4 or 5 meetings a year as a huge collective team. And I want to do a lot of one-on-ones like that. That's just my style, right? So it doesn't mean it's bad or worse. It's just like, I can't do it all. And so it's just figuring out what I am trying to build. I think that's, I just took that away as really good affirmation and understanding that. And I think that's a great point. I want to jump to your dad here because we haven't heard from him in a while, but also because I think there's something that I'm really curious in your role, Keith, if I'm right in this, you're doing a lot of stuff with players, but you've had a huge impact on other people's coaches. And obviously your son is a coach. I'm curious, as a coach of coaches, someone that develops coaches and impacts coaches, what could you tell us about ways that people that are mentoring or coaching or trying to help other coaches? So a lot of the coaches I work with and I listen to this podcast, they are a head coach and they have a staff, right? So I think you could really speak to, how do you help your son? How do you help in those moments where they call you and maybe they had a bad practice, or they're like, what's your process to helping them become a better coach?
All you got to do is listen. You got to listen purely and explore deeply. So I can get in the way of someone else's thinking. And there are times when that needs to happen, where you've got to invade their world, but particularly it's not my world that I'm working in, it's their world. So listening deeply to what's actually being shared, and then depending on the response, because of course questions that we all pose is not where the magic lies. The magic lies in listening to their response and then replying accordingly. So listening and then shaping it so that, you know, I'm just the conductor. I'm not the soloist. It's not my journey. It's not for me. For me, it's to empower them so they can come up with their own solutions. Otherwise, it's my belief and my value that is actually manipulating situations to meet my need. And in actual fact, it's far from that. So as a conductor, I'm helping the soloist. I'm helping them to navigate through this minefield of whatever it is, this cauldron of information that they're struggling with or have got a challenge with. And then hopefully they'll come up with their opportunity to explore and find an experience or a different way to get their outcome. So what's clear, listen, stay out the way of my thoughts and beliefs, which are challenging at times when you know somebody's actually likely to struggle, but they've got to struggle. How do you develop something when everything's given to them? And this is where I shared earlier on, where I think parents actually invade and they hijack the kid's struggle. They hijack, and I can hijack somebody else's struggle.
Mm.
So staying out the way is very important, but equally being supportive as and when, and sharing information where it's honest. You know, it's an honest and open conversation, authentic, because people sense that. They sense your words. There's a lovely little quote by Maya Angelou, and we use it. I use it a lot, that, you know, people will tend to forget what we said. That, you know, as a young boy, I'd forget what my teacher used to tell me. I'd equally forget what we did, or what she or what he did, but I'd never forget or never forgot how they made me feel. And ultimately, if I exit on that, how they felt from their experience, and equally how I felt, then, you know, we'll get interaction, and it's safe, and that's important.
I guess I'm curious. One thing in particular, I mean, if you got any more other tips for coaches with their staff or the people they work with, I'd love to hear those, to maybe sometimes help them to accelerate growth, especially in particular when you know they're off the path. Like, you know, David calls you and you know the type of coach he wants to be. You know his why. You know what's important to him. But when he's maybe got a blind spot, how do you, as a coach to David or other coaches that you've worked with, how do you help them in that situation?
It's important to understand what their why is. What's the purpose? And really all eyes, what's your mission? What's the purpose in doing X? Because if they're actually going towards Y, it may still be another pathway to actually get to where they want to be. And so to be able to answer that, it's actually getting, it's listening for their story, rather than listening to their story, because people just give you stories. Well, X did this and Y did that. Well, actual fact, if I'm listening to that, I'm actually taking away what really is taking place deeper behind it, because it could have been, it's all in context, could be in the environmental issues. It could be where the players have fallen out. There's so much to unpack from that. But really, once I know what their why is and they come off track, then you're either pulling them on track again very quick with a stern, you know, you mentioned David, it's slightly different when David's around, because that's blood. You know, and we do speak, and I've spoke for the last every single day. It's different, but when I'm working with somebody that I don't live with, we've got to build up a connection and an honesty and a truthfulness that is not for me. And literally pulling them back and pulling the reins on them, where if you want them to struggle, and you know, I'm working with somebody at the moment who's coaching at a very high level, and you know, he's recently gone in post, he's gone into situ. And how do you learn that? How do you learn to coach without coaching? How do you learn to actually work with players without working with players who have got, you know, some legs, some longevity? We put a lot of rubber on the day. How do you learn that? And sometimes I have done it, and I'm sure I still will, is I'm actually trying to get them from A to B quicker than I did. Because the answers are out there. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. I think the complexity, and it is very complex, where we can get all information from the internet, watch all fancy practices. Well, really, they actually don't fit the playing model. It's not the method. It's not our playing method. It's not our model. So therefore, we go off track. And really, it's listen, where are we? Where do you want to go? What's your purpose? What's your mission? Where do you want to go? And then if they come off track, it's pulling them back on very quickly. And again, having that trust where they go, look, how do you want me to communicate with you? Do you want me to text you? Do you want me to phone you? Do you want me to email you? Do you want me to WhatsApp you? Getting all of that out front. And then look, if it comes around to the ugly conversation, how do you want me to deal with it?
This episode is brought to you by the TOC one-on-one coaching program. We're dedicated to helping leaders and organizations build an extraordinary culture that puts people first. At TOC, we believe that coaches need coaches, and we're here to provide you with the practical guidance and support you need to succeed. Our program includes weekly one-on-one coaching calls with myself or Nate, who will serve as your trusted sounding board and help you navigate any challenges you may face. You'll also have access to our culture assessments and 360 feedback, which provide valuable insights into your leadership style, as well as personalized plans for creating a culture that reflects your values and goals. As a member of the TOC one-on-one coaching program, you'll also gain access to our thriving TOC community, where you can connect with other coaches from around the world, participate in book studies and roundtable discussions, as well as access a wealth of resources designed to help you build a winning culture. If you're ready to take your coaching to the next level and create an extraordinary culture for your team or organization, we'd love to hear from you. Visit tocculture.com/workwithus to learn more about the TOC one-on-one coaching program, or you can find more information at tocculture.com. Links to both of these sites will be included in the details of this episode.
Yeah, I love that bit there. You're essentially asking for permission. Not asking for permission. I mean, I was just interviewing Tim Elmore just yesterday. I don't know if you've ever read any of his books, Generation Z Unfiltered and All the Mistakes We Can Make as a Parent or something like that. But he's brilliant. And he talked about how so much, even just this generation, just asking, hey, do I have permission to hold you accountable? You know, and I think whether that's with our players or even with our staff that we're coaching, I think that's a really, really great way to approach that, gaining those permissions and also insight into the best, most effective way to communicate that. David, I have a question for you here on you know, the subtitle of your, you know, first book there is How to Become a More Effective Coach Quickly. And I want to focus on that word quickly. There's a lot of great stuff that we could unpack that we're just not going to today as far as skills and tools that coaches can use to build relationships, to hold guys accountable. You know, there's so much good stuff. But the focus on the word quickly, you know, when we've got these things here, do you have any advice for coaches that are coming into maybe next season and they feel like they're in a bit of a rut of something that they could do? What's one or two things that you think a lot of young coaches out there, or even older coaches, aren't doing that they could be doing that would accelerate their growth?
I actually worked with a player and I was probably in that bit of a situation where I wasn't sure if I was getting where I needed to get to with the player. And from there, it was, again, reflection in terms of how can I help this player? And I ended up doing a bit of digging. I did quite a bit of digging. And my dad actually has a really good story around this, which I'm sure he can share as well. But I did some digging around the player, and it was something that we talked about in the book, where most athletes want three things. And if I'm ever in a place where I'm not quite going right, I generally resort back to these three things for people. And the three ones, do you care for them? Or do they know that you care? Can they trust you? And can they learn from you? And obviously, if we were to unpack it, care is something that it's an everyday thing. And you could show it in such simple ways in terms of how you interact and really just doing the extra, just doing a little bit extra, whether that's an extra conversation, whether that's staying behind 10 minutes after the session to just help them on something that they need help on. The trust bit obviously takes time, but I talked about this earlier on, it's consistency and being consistent in your messages, being consistent in your behaviors. And then the learning thing is something that as a coach, you develop over time, because to teach somebody, you have to be able to understand what it is you're working on or what it is you are supposed to be teaching. And how do I help this athlete in an area if I don't understand the subject? So having a really good base foundation of knowledge is important. And the player that I mentioned, it wasn't that I wasn't getting through personally, but there was from a playing standpoint, I just wasn't clicking fully. And I like I said, did a bit of digging, and it turns out that this particular boy had never really had anyone I think that had really cared for him, like really genuinely cared about him and about who he was. And without going into too much depth around it, family stuff that was involved, and I actually helped with certain things. And if he needed anything from that standpoint, I was there and I was around it, but I made him feel very, very comfortable in the environment, because in previous environments that he'd been in, every time he did something wrong, he just got hammered. He got absolutely hammered. He'd make a mistake and he'd be looking at me. And we worked through that. And in terms of the praise that I gave the kid, I praised him whenever he did something well, I would praise him. It's something as simple as effort. Just a little bit of run, I'd, well done, son. Fantastic. Excellent. Love your effort. And over time, obviously, like I mentioned, with the consistency of what I did, this player has grown exponentially. And then we unpack the element of can you learn? And we've spent a lot of time, and it's a project that I've worked on around him as a player and where he was and where he is now. And I actually made a video for this boy that, again, just shows doing a little bit extra can go a long, long way.
I think what you shared there is the best answer someone could possibly give. I think a lot of times we look for the skills or the tools or the activity to that we need to do with our team, or the question that we need to ask our player. And I think there's a lot in coach development to be said for looking for new team activities and skills that we have to develop as far as questioning or instruction or praising. And you go deep into those things within the book and you give a lot of practical stuff. But what you just hit me with there was just the importance of just actually just genuinely caring and trying to build a relationship. I always really try to focus on this. Am I actually genuinely curious, or am I just asking questions so they think that I'm curious and caring, you know? And if I gently, like, you know, some people are like, oh, I struggle with questions of what questions to ask kids. You know, do you have any good questions? And I think it's great. Throw a couple good questions in your pocket every time you're going into a conversation with a player, or just show up and just genuinely care and have curiosity. And I think from that, the questions naturally will flow, you know? And so I think your answer there is powerful, because there's one thing that every coach can start to do more of is just care more. And that would just, they'd be more effective, you know, even if they didn't learn these skills or techniques. That's just phenomenal.
Yeah. And look, you mentioned you asked the questions. It's great to ask questions, but it's not asking the questions that's important. It's about listening and really listening intently. And how many times we've all probably done it. Everybody that'll listen to this will have done it. You walk into a room and hey, JP, how are you? And before you've answered your question, I'm already asking the next person the same question. Well,
yeah.
You've just, well, actually, I'm okay. And I've already moved on, and I've not even given you the fraction of the time that you need for me to explore if there's anything I can do to assist. And listening intently is so important. You ask good questions, but you have to listen and really, really listen.
I want to finish up today with these two questions for you both. First question is, what's something you've changed your mind on in the last year? I love asking this question of coaches. And what's something you've doubled down on in the last year? And that'd be the second question.
Standards. I'll go for standards. So double down on standards, because I think we're quite happy to accept mediocrity. An example, not long ago, you know, a practice taking place, and fortunately we were aware we got a number of staff there, and we're actually delivering a session rather than actually delivering something of great value that can take that boy onto a different trajectory. We're accepting mediocrity, or did. So when it's brought to the, so standards is one for me. Standards of quality, standards of behavior, standards of practice design, standards of how we present ourselves. Maintaining high standards. Because the standards you set, the standards you get. What I've changed my opinion or mind on is having the, you know, I was very intransigent, flexible, but, you know, David's already made caring, praising, but being very, very, so changing my mind around how this is me, how careful we've got to be in this new landscape. How careful, and careful being how we facilitate information, how we interact with parents, how we interact with each other. What has changed, and what I've changed my opinion on, is my way was the only way. Now there's not, there's many ways. As you know, the more and more people that I meet in these fields, in this sphere, this working space, the more and more I actually find out inadequate I am. But I don't change my beliefs and my values around standards, people behavior, you know, how we should interact. That's never going to change. I can evolve it, but it's not going to change. That's etched. But I certainly have changed in how I actually interact with parents. Players similar, but you know, we've got to be very careful nowadays. It can be a toxic world. And how we interact with them is, they'll remember all they've got is one set of eyes, and we're looking across, you know, there's a number of players, little Johnny or little Murray, where the parent is, they're just looking for their little son or the daughter, and rightly so. Well, there's nothing wrong with that, but got to be very careful how we interact with them.
David?
Stole my answer, and I'm not cheating. It's standards, but it's so easy, JP, it's so easy to say something, but do you do it? And do you do it every day? So obviously high standards, the term high standards is used probably in pretty much every environment. Well, high standards is leaving a place cleaner than it was when you arrived. High standards is not walking past something when it's been left on the floor. High standards is obviously taking care of your environment. High standards is, if you say that something starts at 8 o'clock, that you are there and you are absolutely ready to go before 8 o'clock. And high standards is also holding the other people in your environment to that too. So whether that's your athletes, whether that's other coaches. So double down on that. I think a lot of people use the term. I don't necessarily think a lot of people live by it, but it's also a lot easier to say things than it is to do them. I think it's hard to, it's, someone actually said this to me a couple of weeks ago. It's easy to do something when you're motivated, but when you're not, you need to be disciplined. And discipline always comes above motivation.
All right, we're going to end on that encouragement from David. Thanks to both of them for coming to the podcast. Check out their book, Gold Dust, How to Become a More Effective Coach Quickly, as well as their podcast, Gold Dust. The thing I appreciate about their book was the tangible and practical tools to build relationships, motivate, and praise athletes. Be sure to check out their website, thegolddustcoach.com. Thanks for listening in to today's episode. If you find our podcast valuable, please subscribe, leave us a review, and share it with others in your community.